If more of our so-called leaders would walk the same streets as the people who voted them in, live in the same buildings, eat the same food instead of hiding behind glass and steel and bodyguards, maybe we'd get better leadership and a little more concern for the future.
I'm Derek Gilbert.
And I'm Sharon Gilbert, and welcome to the Day of Reckoning.
Yes.
Dun, dun, dun.
Reckoning?
April 17th.
Oh,
you've got until
right.
Midnight, folks.
And I reckon that's about 4.5 hours, at least in our time zone.
That's true. Well, you know what? We filed ours last week.
Yep.
Electronically, so. Mind you.
And voluntarily, completely voluntarily, according to IRS.
In full compliance,
yes. I like how the IRS says that it's a voluntary contribution, but we're going to throw you in the slammer if you don't volunteer.
Oh, I volunteer. Know if you don't volunteer that cash.
Yeah, the simplified 1040 form. Fill in how much money you made last year. Blank two, send it in.
Well, the nice thing is they didn't require too much blood, and they didn't ask for DNA this year, but we're waiting for next year.
Yeah.
And how I'm going to send that through email, I don't know.
Well, I'm sure they'll figure out a way. We've got the little camera there in the new bunker studio.
You know what? That probably is on all the time, and I just don't know.
We just don't know it.
I was sitting there working on the taxes.
Yeah.
They saw me. She's making a face. I don't know. That's
and someone will get a little Ned Flanders will pop up on the screen. Hey, we got a...
Green education.
Green education in Sector 7B. Well, it is April the 17th of 2006, and we thank you for joining us here in the bunker. A program note. You can pick up all of the new programs now. Well, not live, but just slightly tape delayed or electron delayed on the Remnant Radio Network at 10 o'clock Central Time now. That's 1 hour earlier, 11 o'clock Eastern, 8 o'clock Pacific, and that is Monday through Friday. And then the show will be replayed the following day at 1 o'clock Central Time. And again, that's Monday through Friday. So you get first crack at the show if you haven't already downloaded it. By 10 o'clock Central Time, it'll be streamed live at remnantradio.org.
Wow, I'm streaming in my sleep.
That's
okay. I don't know, is that legal?
They've got special pants for that. That's being in the darkness.
Honey, Tom Wood is going to drive off the road. Oh, I don't know if you've listened. If, you know, if you haven't listened to the show where Derek accidentally leaves the car out of peering. Tom Horn sent us a note, said he almost drove off the road because he was laughing so hard. Tom, stay out of the ditch.
Yeah, and another program note, we will be guests with Tom Horn Friday night as he is the guest host on The Q Files, which is, we'll put a link to the show notes, but you can listen to that stream live on the web at stevequayle.com. Tom sits in and guest hosts on Thursdays and Friday evenings now, and that'll be at 6 o'clock Central Time Friday night. 7 o'clock Eastern, 4 o'clock Pacific. It's also on shortwave. If you've got a K-band satellite dish, you can listen that way, too. You get so many options.
I know.
So we haven't figured out what we're going to talk to Tom about yet, but we need to let him know tonight because he's he sent us an email with exclamation points saying, let me know so I can prepare. So we'll be doing that on Friday night, and we're looking forward to that because every time we talk with Tom Horn, it is just a fascinating discussion. In fact, Larry Taylor, who sends out a great daily news update through Yahoo groups called From the Edge Alerts. Great watchman on the wall, Larry Taylor and his From the Edge Alerts. And he posted a note about our last appearance on the Q-Files with Tom Horn, which just said, over the top topic. As we were talking about... I forgot what we talked about. It was
over the top.
It was over the top.
I think we were talking
explode.
About things that were taking place in the Middle East and why
yes.
we were really there.
Yes, yeah, looking for things that might be buried underground. And that's actually a good lead-in to a story from Raiders News Update, which is Tom Horn's news site that he posted today. Now, he took this story from Sorsha Fall, which is, what is her website again? It's
whatdoesitmean.com.
Yeah, and we always throw out the caution that when you look for news items at Sorcha Fall's website. You have to read with discernment. She links to stories, but she will sometimes make claims that information is coming from Russian intelligence. And, of course, there's no way to confirm whether that's the case or not.
Exactly.
Now, as you remember, Friday night we talked about the United States military, the Marine Corps, offering an apology to the Iraqi government, whoever that is, for damage caused to the site of ancient Babylon, that the Marines that were there had scooped up all kinds of dirt from archaeological dig sites to fill sandbags, and that they had just caused a lot of damage to some historic sites of, you know, that are really important to the entire world. Sorcha Fall takes it a step further and says that Russian intelligence analysts are reporting that there was a bizarre religious ritual performed by elements of the U.S. military at the site of ancient Babylon, including some top leaders. This is really weird. Seen by Russian satellite photos, quoting now, taken of the areas around Babylon, these reports state that the Americans have constructed a nearly 1 kilometer circle around their massive excavation of Babylon, which would make sense for defensive purposes, you'd think, except that this was in the shape of a feathered serpent in an apparent ritual relating to the ancient objects that they are about to unearth and have stationed giant U.S. military cargo aircraft to bring to the United States on the specific date of April 16th, which, of course, is Easter Sunday. Now, the feathered serpent would be Quetzalcoatl?
Well, actually, that's possible, but I'm thinking about the Cahokia. Did their Ouroboros have feathers on it?
No. The symbol that Nicole and I saw on display, which actually was taken from Moundsville, Alabama, a site in Alabama, which was concurrent with Cahokia back in the 12th, 13th century, with two rattlesnakes basically tied in a circle,
right,
but looked like an Ouroboros. It was strikingly similar to the Ouroboros symbol.
Well, to me, it's the same sort of symbol, this whole notion of a snake circle, which, of course, as David Flynn has told us, is the ecliptic.
Right.
And if you look at the Milky Way from Earth, you see what looks like a snake eating its tail.
Right.
And that is the Ouroboros.
Or Leviathan.
Exactly. In the Bible, I think it's called Leviathan. I that's my opinion, and I think others believe that, and David Flynn is one of them. And I wonder, since you said circle, if that's what that really was.
That's an interesting point. She goes on and does link to the article that we referenced the other night about the U.S. Marine Colonel, offering an apology for the damage. She continues with her analysis and says, the feathered serpent aspect of this most strange ritual being performed by the Americans in their retrieval of the underground finds in the ancient vaults of Babylon lend further credence to historians who state that the actual name of America was taken from the winged serpent god of the Americas name in Peru, which is called Amaruca. A-M-A-R-U-C-A.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, and she links to an article that relates to that story. Most concerning to both Muslim and Russian religious leaders of these mysterious events is the timing of them to coincide with the ancient Babylon religious worship of Easter, Ishtar, but to which Western Christians have adopted as being the day their Lord arose from the dead, but in actuality is a celebration of the darkest of the world's powers, as we can read. And then she goes on to quote from a website that ties the links from the modern Easter celebrations to the ancient celebration of the goddess Semiramis, who, of course, was the wife of Nimrod.
Right. And they had Tammuz, which is actually the real name isn't Tammuz. It's, I can't remember it.
Dumuzi was the the name on the Sumerian
king list.
But
it's been sort of anglicized into Tammuz.
Right. Yeah, Dumuzi was the, in the Sumerian king list, was like second generation after.
Right, but I think most people listening are going to be more familiar with T-A-M-M-U-Z.
Right, referenced in the book of Ezekiel.
Right.
Yeah, and then she concludes, to the darkness that has enveloped the Western peoples for their devotion to the ancient gods of darkness we have spoken of many times. With these new events occurring in Babylon today, the entire world should indeed shudder, for by all accounts, those cruel demons of our ancient days may once again be unleashed upon us all by the actions of the Americans. For even in our most ancient days, these horrific dark masters were feared by the angels themselves. And as war with the Persians of Iran is soon to occur, and which will undoubtedly unleash the largest war of all, it is well that we all remember the words of Daniel 10:20 about this greatest of beasts. Read and understand, quote, but I am going back to make war with the angel of Persia, and when I am gone, the angel of Greece will come, and there is no one on my side against these but Michael, your angel. Well, I'm not sure how that verse quite applies here, but in any case, it is an interesting point to ponder. If the so-called damage that was taking place at Babylon mm-hmm. was not damage, I mean, you know, accidental damage, soldiers who were thinking only of their tactical situation and not of the historic treasures, the archaeological treasures on which they were standing and landing their helicopters and driving their vehicles.
Right. Instead, they were performing a ceremony.
Performing a cult ceremony. Yeah. Yeah. Very, very interesting indeed.
Well, I just have to bring up here, honey, and that is that you and I support our troops.
Yes, absolutely.
And so when we say that there is a remote possibility that this story might be true, you notice all those ifs and...
yes, ifs, ands, buts, and no other confirmations at this time.
Exactly. But were this to be true, it does not mean that we've got soldiers who are necessarily the occult. I firmly believe that there is a tiny portion of the military that is involved in this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the soldiers, men and women who are over there, their hearts are so wonderful. And I tell you what, I just wish I could give them, you know, hugs. And we pray for you guys all the time. We're not saying that we think the military is over there doing all this kind of stuff.
No. And again, we take what we read with Sorcha Fall with a grain of salt.
Mm-hmm. But I do think that there is an occult element to our reason for going in.
I agree.
And again, it has to do with this small portion of our government that I think they're Luciferians.
I agree. And this is probably an area in which we need to get somebody who's really studied the topic, maybe somebody like John Ronson, who wrote The Men Who Stare at Goats, or somebody who's done more research onto the amount of time, money, and effort that our military and intelligence services have put into researching and experimenting with the occult.
That's right.
We've kind of come at the topic from the sides a little bit. You know, Peter Lavenda touched on it to an extent, but it is something that we need to address and deal with.
Well, now we're going to take a short detour through Florida. yes, and that takes us to a different site. There's a story. Now, I've lost my page. Do you still have that?
I've got the story, well, the homepage of the company that we were dealing with here, but not the story itself. Mad Cow Productions?
Yeah, hold on. Let me get that.
Daniel Hopsicker is an investigative reporter and writer, and he's another fellow that we need to talk to
here
and soon.
MadCowProd.com.
Yeah.
This is a story that Daniel Hopsicker has just released today. He's calling it his world exclusive. And it has to do with a plane that was waylaid by the Mexican soldiers sometime last week that was carrying 5.5 tons of cocaine.
Now, we talked about that on
We did. We talked about that, but we you know what? We weren't making the connections that Hopsicker has. And, you know, honey, I you explain things really well when it comes to this kind of connecting of the dots, so to speak. But I'll tease it by saying this. If you're going to play 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, let's play 6 degrees of a Muhammad Atta.
Yes.
No. Who can we connect? And believe it or not, this does hopscotch over to Tom DeLay.
Yeah, and Daniel Hopsicker has done some amazing work in connecting dots here. If you go to his website, madcowprod, all one word, .com, and start reading through the articles and the research that he's done, it's no wonder that he's got a number of legal actions that have been filed against him to try to shut him up.
You know what? He's done some digging on the people who own the plane.
Right. Now, he's in Venice, Florida. Now, Venice, Florida, of course, is the site of the flight school that supposedly trained Muhammad Atta and his co-conspirators.
And that's the big connection.
That's the big connection.
Because the flight school also had another company on the same or using the same address
mm-hmm.
as their runway.
Right. Now, this DC-9 that was arrested, the plane wasn't arrested, but the pilot wasn't arrested.
He got away. The only white man, the only gringo
yeah,
on the plane
crew.
was the one who got away.
Isn't that curious?
Yeah.
Well, the plane that was stopped at this airport in the Yucatan, it's a DC-9, which is a jet airliner, twin engine, often used for passenger jets. One of the two owners of this particular jet was appointed to the Business Advisory Council of the National Republican Congressional Committee in 1993 by
Tom DeLay.
The registered owner of the plane is a company called Royal Sons, S-O-N-S, LLC, which is a charter company based in Florida, housed at one time at a hangar in Venice, Florida. And, of course, the airport is the one owned by Huffman Aviation, the flight school that trained Muhammad Atta and his co-conspirators.
Of course, no one there remembers that ever being there.
Mm-hmm.
It's a small airway,
and the DC-9 is a big plane. Now, painted on the side of this plane is an insignia for a company called Skyway Aircraft, which is a...
It looks an awful lot like a U.S. government seal.
Well, it does. It does. It's got the eagle there, and it's got the stalks of wheat behind it, and it looks very official. You could easily mistake it for an official United States government emblem. In addition, the plane is painted with the same blue and white color scheme that's used by planes that are owned and operated by the United States government.
You know, I know this is a detour, and I apologize for this, but if I don't say it now, I'll forget. You know, I'm looking at this symbol, and it's wheat. It's bundles of wheat that are tied together. Now, there's an Italian name for what that is.
Oh, yeah, isn't it?
Fasce.
Fasce, yeah. Which is the root word of...
A fascist.
Yeah.
And if you look in, I think it's in, is it in the Senate chamber or in the House chamber? On the sides, behind the big desk, are fasce.
Okay, interesting.
Well, wonder what that means. It's a symbol for bundling everybody together and have control over.
Right, yeah, because you're strong. Well, and also because there's more strength in numbers than there is in letting people do what they want to do.
Yes.
Strengths for the guys telling, who
exactly.
are the ones telling other
exactly.
people.
Exactly,
yeah.
exactly.
Well, sorry, I digressed. Back to this DC-9, it was purchased in a partnership between a company called Royal Sons Motor Yacht Sales and another company called Skyway Communications. Now, this Skyway Communications obviously lends its name, Skyway Aircraft, to the company with the symbol painted on the side of the plane. The owner of the company is a man named Brent Kovar. We start getting into a tangled web here, but the point is that we've got a guy who owns a company called Skyway Communication, and this plane, according to Skyway Communications' website, was purchased in January of 2004 to be used as sort of a test platform for its airborne broadband communications network.
Uh-huh. Wireless communication. And they even use the words Homeland Security
right.
in the description of what they do.
Yes. The focus, according to the company's website, is in-flight wireless Homeland Security and in-flight entertainment service. Now, the logo, the company logo, again, Protection of America's Skies. I'm wondering why... And maybe there's a logical explanation here, but why would in-flight broadband be of any benefit to Homeland Security? I mean, don't the people who are in charge of keeping us safe on airplanes have means to communicate without needing broadband access on a computer?
Well, you'd think so, but you know what? If you're going to be a smuggler, having broadband in your plane is probably really helpful.
It could be. It could be.
To communicate with other people. But, that aside... Yeah, you can have they could say their business is hauling hogs. I mean.
Yeah, that's true.
They could say their business is anything.
Yeah,
it's just that
the point is that what the plane was actually being used for was it $5 million worth of cocaine that they,
in
128
suitcases.
Yeah, 5 tons of cocaine. I'm sorry. That's a lot of
cocaine. 5.5 tons of cocaine in 128 identical suitcases marked private.
They'll never look at it this way.
No. But you know, if you're in another country where more than likely the guards at the airport, especially the soldiers, probably don't read English. You know, you see this blue and white eagle on mm-hmm. the side, and it's in a round seal, and it looks an awful lot like a government seal. Mm-hmm. I think the first thing that would cross your mind is, this is a U.S. government plane. Mm-hmm. This is an official plane. We'd better not mess with them.
Yeah. Well, again, remembering that this plane is owned as a joint venture between Skyway Communications and Royal Suns, mm-hmm. we'll take a look at Royal Suns and see where those threads lead. Daniel Hopsicker, again, has done the research, and he's dug up the connections between Royal Suns and a cluster of other air charter firms that appear to be serving as dummy front companies for the CIA. Now, surely the CIA wouldn't be involved in something like running drugs.
Oh, honey, I'm shocked. I'm shocked that you would even think that.
I'm sure Gary Webb of the San Jose Mercury was as well when he first discovered the connection. The other companies involved, Express One International, Genesis Aviation, and United Flight, FLITE Incorporated. All four companies, according to Hopsicker, appear to be interlocking and just following a time-honored agency pattern going back over 50 years, using frequent cosmetic changes of the aircraft title to make it very difficult to positively ID mm-hmm. the plane at any given time. Now, the question is, once you understand that, I think, if you can make those connections then to front companies for the agency, the escape of the pilot makes a lot more sense.
Mm-hmm.
He's the guy who was somebody who it would have been embarrassing, apparently, had his identity been revealed.
Oh, exactly. These soldiers go in, they storm a plane, however you want to say it. Mm-hmm. They go on board. How did they manage to do that and get the co-pilots, but not the pilot?
Yeah, the news reports indicated that the Mexican army had been waiting for the plane, that they'd been tipped off, and they were waiting for the plane when it arrived. And yet, the pilot somehow managed to elude the Mexican army, although they caught everyone else on board.
You know, this is a very, very... You just really need to go to the site. We'll put a link in the show notes.
Yeah.
Go here, read it twice.
Yeah, it is a long and complex story, but the bottom line is that, again, we've got somebody who appears to be connected to power brokers within the Republican Party, owning half of a plane that was supposed to be used as a test platform for this new airborne wireless network. And it turns up in the Yucatan with 5.5 tons of cocaine. And apparently, the co-owner of the airplane is just another front company for the Central Intelligence Agency. So really bizarre story. And yet another example of how the powers that be are just playing a game, behind the curtains. It's like they're operating on a whole different game board from the rest of us, one that does not have any rules.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, they can just basically pick up the money from, free parking anytime. And they always get out of jail free.
Well, you know, if you're looking to move and get a new house, Venice, Florida might be the place to go, because I'm thinking it's gonna be a hot spot.
Probably.
You know, speaking of cocaine, there's a story that was in the news last week, and I don't think we ever talked about it. Down in Colombia, there's an Indian tribe that is making a new consumer drink out of coca leaves, not cocoa. Mm-hmm. Coca leaves. Coca Sec is the name of it. And the soft drink is sold by the NASA community in the remote mountain village of Inza in southern Colombia. And they boil down the syrup and they put it into this citrus flavored drink, and they call it more than an energizer.
Yeah, no kidding.
and apparently it's so incredibly popular. It is not as strong as cocaine, because cocaine is an alkaloid that it's extremely concentrated, whereas the way they're doing it, it's probably just a minor buzz. Not that I'm advocating going mm-hmm. out and getting it, but I think this is the kind of thing, as we see the elections that are taking place in the Central and Southern America, South mm-hmm. America countries, more and more Indian, native Indian politicians are taking the front. They're taking the lead. And the many of those are very much in favor of chewing coca leaves and mm-hmm. chewing local plants. And they're ticked off that the gringos are coming down there. And in fact, they don't.
And flying it all back on DC-9s.
They are. But the way I understand it, these leaves, and again, this is very pagan, but these leaves are considered sacred, and they're not supposed to be used the way gringos use them.
Mm-hmm.
So this is part of the anti-American sentiment that has really taken hold down there. And I think that this coca sec beverage mm-hmm. is probably going to be really popular, and it wouldn't surprise me if they try to infiltrate Northern America eventually with it.
Well, yeah,
because
you can smuggle.
Apparently, it's replacing the drinks that the kids down there drink now, which are the same drinks that the kids drink here.
Right, Pepsi and Coca Cola.
Well, and Mountain Dew. All of the what's the one that's
Red Bull?
Red Bull, that's one. Yeah,
and there are a bunch of others that are like that are really getting popular. Yeah. I used to drink one when I was working the late night show at the radio station in Philadelphia. I don't know if it's still around anymore. Jolt Cola.
I remember Jolt. I never tasted it,
yeah.
But I remember.
You know, it was really good. I used to go through like 3 or 4 cans during a show. But that was during a period of time where I was working a second job during the day. I was getting like 5 hours sleep and then having to get back up and go work, 8 hours. Yeah. But Jolt Cola, the marketing slogan was all the sugar and twice the caffeine. Yeah, used to buy it by the case.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. As long as we're speaking of drugs, and we talked last week about how the Times of London ran an article which said that the drug companies, the major pharmaceutical companies, are basically inventing diseases, inventing mm-hmm. conditions, which, of course, can only be treated by buying the latest, little fill-in-the-blank here, pill,
mm-hmm.
little purple pill, little, whatever. Well, it's the blue pill that is the topic of our story at this moment. General Motors Corporation has announced, and I think what they're trying to do here is make a point as to how ridiculous medical costs have become. The largest automaker in the world announced that they are currently spending $17 million a year for Viagra and Cialis. These drugs are covered under the medical plan that was negotiated with the United Auto Workers. And so somebody has a case of ED and they can go and get a prescription for one of these erectile dysfunction drugs, and it's covered under their insurance plan. Now, $17 million is a small price. I mean, it's a small portion of their total healthcare cost. GM's healthcare expense last year was about $5.6 billion.
That's a lot of dollars.
That adds about $1,500 U.S. to the cost of every single automobile that they make.
Uh-huh.
So you're looking at that new Chevy, truck or whatever. That first $1,500 is just the cost to cover the cost of insurance claims, medical insurance claims. Which includes things like Viagra and Cialis. Ford Motor Company was asked, but they declined to say how much they spend on erectile dysfunction drugs, and a Chrysler spokesman could not provide figures.
The world's gone mad.
It
has gone mad. Well, let's go back down to South America again. The Venezuelan deputy foreign minister is cheesed at the gringos because the U.S. Southcom organization has sent down a carrier strike group to the Caribbean Sea mm-hmm. to conduct Operation Partnership of the Americas.
Partnership of the Americas.
Yes, we're down there to train people to when it comes to unconventional threats such as narco-terrorism and human trafficking. And we're also going to foster goodwill. Well, the deputy foreign minister believes that we're down there preparing for an invasion of Venezuela.
Well, seeing as how the exercises include 6,500 Marines, United States Marines, I could see why they might be a little nervous.
That's a lot of Marines.
The other interesting thing that you posted here in the story of Watcher Magazine is that during 2006, according to this story, the Pentagon plans to deploy 16,000 American troops in Latin America.
16,000. Also, they have sent down the USS George Washington, which is a carrier that is approved for transporting tactical nuclear weapons.
So you've got the symbolism, the image, you know, the George Washington, which is as American as you can possibly get.
Right.
But then you've got the...
serving apple pie, I'm pretty
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, you've got the iron fist inside that velvet glove there of, you know, don't mess with us because we've got the tactical nukes.
And we're here to foster goodwill.
Yeah.
Like good, it or not.
Yeah, goodwill means do what we tell you and everything.
Goodwill. Oh, let's see. That's another GW.
Yeah.
George Washington, GW. Goodwill, GW. Who else is GW? Oh, yeah, Bush.
It is funny, though, that they're down there to... conduct exercises in combating narco-terrorism.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, look at Langley.
And human trafficking, which I think is very interesting in the light of many young girls disappearing.
The Natalie Holloway case, and
yeah,
there was
there
another
are
case
those
a couple
think
of
that
years
that
back.
There may be a case of that, sadly.
Sure.
Well, you know, also there's a story of the U.S. planning to open 3 military bases in Turkey. Now, add this to the super bases that we are building in Iraq, along
yeah.
with our great big old embassy.
Now, we talked about that the other day, and I don't think we talked about it on the air when I was thinking about it. I think we discussed it just...
Mm-hmm. We did.
We discussed between ourselves the base, not the base, but the... Well, I guess you'd call it a base. The new American embassy in Baghdad is going to be 10 times... is going to encompass an area that is 10 times larger.
Yeah, I think we did talk about this on the air on Friday, though. Well, if we didn't, then I apologize, but I thought we had. But it's huge.
Yeah, 10 times larger.
And in fact, that story, if you do a search for embassy, you'll find that it's posted on Watcher Magazine from last Friday.
Right, embassy in Baghdad, and that'll pretty well cover it. But yeah, it's 104 acres, which is 10 times larger than any other American embassy in the world.
Yeah, 21 buildings.
And it is going to be completely independent from the power grid and the water
mm-hmm.
supply
right.
in Baghdad so that it can basically function as a self-supporting city.
Now, why do you think they want to be independent from the water supply, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
With all the DU in the ground, I can't blame them.
Well, that's one reason. Another reason might be that this could turn out to be a fortress that
absolutely. I'm sure that that's really the security
reason. Has to defend
itself,
sure.
That, you know, if I were going over there and I knew that there was DU in the
yeah, I don't think I'd want to be drinking our own specially filtered water supply. I think you're right. And not having to depend on the power grid from Iraq, which is in worse shape now than it was before we went in. So it is interesting. When you add the huge embassy fortress that we're building in the middle of Baghdad, the super bases that are being built in the deserts of Baghdad, and the fact that we're adding new bases in Turkey, we've got a very strong presence in Afghanistan on the opposite side of Iran, it could lead you to conclude that perhaps there was a pincer movement that was being drawn up. Yes. So we shall see. And in fact, a retired United States colonel has already said that operations are underway, even as we speak, in Iran. This was a story posted at Raw Story, therawstory.com, over the weekend. An interview on CNN Friday night, retired U.S. Air Force Colonel Sam Gardner came right out and said that operations were already underway. That isn't too difficult to guess. I mean, even if you were just guessing that we might be doing something at some point down the road, surely as a means of preparing for it, we would have special forces in Iran. Well, this retired Colonel Gardner has said that, he was... not only would he make that guess based on the logic of the situation, but he was told by the Iranian ambassador to the International Atomic Energy Agency that, we've already captured some guys who have admitted that they're working with the Americans. So things are happening on the ground behind the scenes in Iran and around Iran. We've got military activity taking place in the form of base construction and deployment. We talked about the AC-130 gunships that were sent mm-hmm. to the region. unless, of course,
which still amazes me because they're big and slow. And if I had a man pad and I didn't know how to use it, I'd want a big and slow target.
Target. Yeah. Of course, you'd only get one shot before they open up with those Gatling guns or whatever it is they have in the sides of those Vulcan miniguns that they have in the side of those.
I did my Vulcan salute.
Yeah, you would not live long or prosper when they open up from those guns and those specters. I mean, if you miss, you're going to be met with a sheet of lead. So we'll keep an eye on that, and we'll keep an eye on other developments in the region. Of course, we want to do a little more research on that ritual around the ruins of Babylon.
Yeah, and we'll see if we can learn more about this DC-9 down in Venice, Florida.
Yeah, see if we can get a hold of Daniel Hopsicker for a future interview. Another thing we need to do some more research on, I didn't find anything on this. You know, we talked about this Friday night, the comet that's supposed to hit us on May 25th.
The comet cleanser?
Yes, the Wachmann-Schlott. whatever the comet was. Did some digging, and it appears that the only sites that are talking about the potential for a comet strike on May 25th are sites that are quoting the PR release that we quoted from on Friday night.
You know, that's the tough thing about the internet is if you get one highly, you know, speculative piece mm-hmm. and then it's quoted on a lot of other sites, it propagates and not everybody quotes back to the original story. Some people will just list it and you're not sure. Maybe it came from that site. So it's easy for something that really is very speculative mm-hmm. to be taken as gospel truth by the time it's been 2 or 3 weeks. We try not to do that. Sometimes we'll get caught up in it too. But for the most part, if there's a story out there that seems too good to be true or just seems too out mm-hmm. there, boy, I do some digging to find out where the original source is.
And we try to tell you when we're throwing something out there that's speculative, like the Sosha Falls story about the about the ritual at Babylon. And, you know, we won't tell you something is true unless there's good documentation for it. And even then, we'll give you the documentation so that you can follow up and check it out yourselves as well. We've got a great interview coming up this week.
We do.
Yeah. Craig A. Evans, who was one of the people on the advisory team for the National Geographic Society, analyzing the Gospel of Judas and the Judas Codex.
If you watch the show on the National Geographic Society channel, you saw him.
Mm-hmm. He was prominently featured. And to the credit of the National Geographic Society and the producer of the special, they gave him the opportunity to sum up what he thinks the importance of the Gospel of Judas is. He basically said that he doesn't think it tells us anything whatsoever about historic Christianity. It gives us some good insights into what the Gnostics were thinking back in the second and third century, but doesn't really tell us anything about historic traditional Christianity, not something that Christians need to take into account. You know, we don't need to rethink everything that we believe in light of this Gospel of Judas. So to their credit, they gave him the opportunity to say that. So, and we'll get into detail with Craig about why he thinks that, you know, what's in the document, what were his responsibilities, history of the document, the whole thing. We'll talk about that over the next 3 nights.
Actually, you talk about it with him.
Yeah.
Because Derek conducted this interview by himself because I was painting the bunker floor.
Yes, yes.
I was slaving.
Lead-based paint to keep out the radiation.
That's right. I was lining the walls with aluminum foil.
So we look forward to that because Craig is a very gracious gentleman. I'm sure the demands on his time have just multiplied exponentially.
And
since
he was so
special.
Kind to, and he was very flexible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was great. And I really look forward to, I got to hear a couple of things he said and I heard your side of the conversation and it sounds like a great interview. I can't wait to hear it.
Well, and he likes your haircut.
He's a cool dude.
Yes. So we've got that coming up, and we will talk with Jay Fields next week about the strange case of Susan Lindauer, a former reporter and congressional aide who just happens to be the second cousin of former White House Chief of Staff Andy Card.
Yep.
She's being held at a mental institution indefinitely.
That's right. She's not getting her day in court, and we want to know why. So we're going to talk to, both of us talk mm-hmm. to Jay Fields next week. And, of course, in the meanwhile, if you have any questions or comments, you can send those to radio@peeringintodarkness.com.
And you can join the free-for-all that is the Peering into Darkness Forum by going to peeringintodarkness.com/forum.
In the meanwhile, enjoy the rest of the day. For those of you who are still laboring over your tax forms, God bless you. We'll pray for you.
I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Have a wonderful evening, everyone. Gonna step up to the microphone.